This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba Through the Hour, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, call this number now, 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, in addition to our intelligent and informative callers, we have some interesting research.
Yes, we're always intelligent and informative. Nuts, corn, popcorn, does that increase your risk of diverticulitis? Those pockets in the colon that are awful, that can swell up and burst and cause problems. Let's talk about the real scientific research versus the old doctor's tale.
Okay, and?
Why do guys go out of their league for ladies?
Out of their league.
Yes, why do they go out of their league for ladies?
We'll talk
about interesting
stuff. And our recipe.
Yes, Vivian's quinoa salad. We will be highlighting quinoa. And if you don't know what quinoa is, stay tuned.
I certainly will stay tuned because I have no idea what quinoa is. We'll be on the phone with a listener with that recipe soon. Let's get to the phone, Zorba, and welcome our first caller. A listener with us now in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi, thank you for having me on the show.
We appreciate the call. How can we help?
Well, I wanted to ask Dr. Zorba, I'm 5 months pregnant, and I'm having some problems kind of with fuzzy thinking, kind of walking in a fog, not being able to conversate regularly. I can't remember the words that I want to say, those types of things. And I heard from a friend that it might have something to do with maybe mild dehydration.
Well, I have those same problems. Maybe I'm pregnant, too.
I don't think so, Tom. That's right. That's right. Foggy, what's foggy?
You know, I can't remember the right words all the time.
But I have to give you a personal story on this. My mom had Alzheimer's disease, died in 1981. No one said the A word at that time because they wouldn't talk about it. It was like cancer, the C word. And I worry about that because I just worry about memory loss, Alzheimer's. Yeah. So when I forget something, I kind of wonder if I'm getting it. But when my partner in my office, my doctor partner Adam, who's about 15 years younger than I am, when he forgets something, I feel good. Because that means I don't have Alzheimer's disease because he's forgotten something.
Does this
too.
Go along with pregnancy sometimes?
Yes. Fuzzy thinking goes along with pregnancy. It is not dehydration. And nobody really knows quite what it is. But it probably has more to do with overall hormonal changes that are going on. But it's a common problem that people talk about. Women talk about it and they'll say, I just don't remember things the way I used to. And
right.
I was always on task and I can't be on task, and I forgot that appointment, and gee, I went to the store, and when I got there, I knew I had 10 things to get, and I got home, and there was no... am I describing what's going on in your life?
Perfectly.
Yes, yes. Well, the cure is delivering the baby. That is the cure. The cure is delivering the baby, and then, let me assure you of something, though. You'll still forget things because you'll be so busy taking care of the baby that you just can't write things down and remember things. But seriously, the fuzziness is probably a hormonal issue, and it just comes with it, and it is not, there's not anything that I've ever seen that shows there's anything you can do about it.
This is your first pregnancy?
Second
pregnancy.
And that's kind of why I was thinking that this might be something, you know, different, because I didn't have this with the first one. So
wait a second. I do have a little bit of an explanation. With the first pregnancy, you didn't notice anything going on, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
What were you doing? Were you working for a living at that time?
I was.
Uh-huh. How many hours a week were you working?
Oh, I'm going to say 30.
Okay, 30 hours. And what kind of work do you do?
At that time, it was running a dental office.
Okay, so in other words, you were working, you were concentrating on things, you were writing things down, computer,
right.
Whatever. Okay, now here it is, pregnancy number two. You've got a baby at home, right? Are you working outside the house?
No.
Okay, so you're not working. What's happening is you're not in the sink of writing things down, doing things, listing things, and you've got another job. You've got a child to take care of. So those two things really have changed it. If you go back and you are scrupulous about writing things down and keeping lists, you can overcome the fuzziness, which is what you really did with that first pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So part of it. And the other thing is, of course, you're taking care of your other child, who is how old?
She's four.
She's four, so Ah, boundless energy. Well, congratulations, yes. Congratulations. And as I said, the fuzziness will go away when you deliver the baby, and then you'll have two babies to take care of, and you'll still forget things at the store.
Yes, okay. Well, thank you. I'll get used to it then.
Thanks for the
thank
call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. So you say, Zorba, that we guys sometimes go out of our leagues looking for the ladies?
It's exactly it. It's really an interesting story. And I have to tell you, it reminds me of my younger days. But this was a study looking at a website. And it was a dating website. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they mined the data, and there were guys and girls on the website, heterosexual website. Guys rated themselves 1 to 10 in terms of hotness and what they thought about themselves. Girls, women rated themselves 1 to 10 in terms of hotness. And then they had other people that looked at the faces, obviously, on the website, yeah. And they determined objectively whether they were hot, what the hotness were. And what they discovered was that guys who thought they were hot but weren't hot at all, on the whole, described themselves as hot and were trying to date girls who were clearly, objectively, based on however objective that can be, hot. So in other words, guys were going out of their league on a very regular basis, thinking that girls were all of a sudden going to be attracted to them, when in reality they were often overweight and kind of dumpy looking.
But sometimes, as was the case with you and the case with me, going out of our league actually worked.
Yes, going out of our league actually worked.
Why not go out of your league when you can really hit gold?
Well, what they found was that the guys hedged their bets by doing 240% more, trying to get 240% more dates than the girls. So on the whole, the guys in another way knew they probably weren't going to get a date from this.
And in this study, they surmise that guys look at TV shows and see these schlubby guys with these really beautiful wives or dates and think, hey, they can do that, I can do that.
And this little study, which is not very scientifically based, basically showed that very hot women often want to go with very hot men and vice versa. That's what it is. People tend visually to stay with their league. But I want to tell you a story that's interesting. After college, I had a friend of mine, and she went to Denver, and so I decided to go out with her girlfriend, who was drop-dead gorgeous. I was in a car driving down the street in Chicago. I'll never forget this. Stopped at a stoplight. There's a guy in the next car. The windows are down, and we're talking with each other. And a guy in the next car looks at her and says, next car over, why don't you dump the guy in the seat next to you? I'm much more handsome than he is. And we drove away. And I said, I can't believe he said that. And she said, that happens to me all the time, and it's awful. It's awful. I can't go down the street without somebody making some comment, I wish I didn't look like this. Yeah. It's a very, very interesting comment.
She did dump you, though.
Yeah, she did dump me. In the end, she dumped me. That's exactly it. I don't remember her name at all, but I'm still thinking about it today. Next study.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the line.
Sure. What's up?
Well, I've got a sports-related question. I've recently started doing endurance races on my bike, and I have been having problems with headaches and cramps after about 3.5 hours. Now, these races are anywhere from 6 to 8 hours, and around 3.5 hours, my neck starts getting really sore, and then around 5.5 hours, I usually start getting a headache or cramps, and I haven't been able to go past 6 hours so far. So I was wondering if you have any suggestions.
Wait a minute. You're riding a bike for 6.5, 8 hours?
Yeah, it's a long day.
Well, that's why you're getting these things. Ride for an hour or two, and it doesn't bother you, right?
Right, right.
But other people ride for 8 hours without getting headaches or any pains or anything?
Well, this is the crux of the issue. My wife rides for 8 hours without having these problems.
Oh, this is a family situation. So she looks at you and goes, hey, buddy, I'm not getting any headaches or problems. How come you are?
What a wuss.
Exactly.
I've got it. So, a couple questions. You obviously, you ride and you stop, right? I mean, you don't ride continuously.
No, I stop.
You stop. And when you stop, what do you drink? What do you eat? What do you drink?
usually drink about 20 ounces of Gatorade per hour, and then I'll have an energy gel or like a Clif Bar or something like that.
Okay, so in other words, you're getting some potassium, not a lot, but you're getting some potassium from Gatorade. You're getting an energy bar, Clif Bar, good source of energy. Basically, these are protein bars that have some carbohydrate and some fat in them too. Okay, so then at hour number three or hour number four, that's when you get your headache, right?
That's when it starts to come on.
Okay. How often, when you stop the bike, how often do you have to pee? How often do you have to urinate?
Almost never.
Almost never. That's your problem. You're dehydrated. That's the whole issue. The whole issue, you just hit the issue completely. If you never have to urinate for 8 hours, your urine is too concentrated, and your problem, your chief problem, is dehydration. You are not drinking enough, period. I don't care what you're drinking, it ain't enough. That's first of all. You should have to stop and urinate every couple of hours, basically, when you're riding and you're doing exercise. So if you're not, you're not drinking enough. That's problem number one. Problem number two is you still may be low in potassium. Okay, so you still may be low in potassium. My recommendation, a banana. Much better in potassium than a Clif Bar, an energy bar, a protein bar. Remember, candy bars, by any other name, are called energy bars. They're basically candy bars. I mean, you could have a Snickers. Now, it's true, Snickers may have different fat and different oil and different protein, but basically a Clif Bar is a Snicker bar by another name. It's slightly different. It's got a wonderful little, you know, top, you know the way it looks, and it's irregular, and it's got a good reputation, but the fact is it's still a candy bar. That's what they are. And what I would recommend is fruit, and I would recommend a potassium-containing fruit such as a banana. So try this. What you do is you hydrate yourself much more for an hour before you take the race. You hydrate yourself so you really have to urinate. You got to, you know, empty your bladder just before the race so you know you're well hydrated, and then double the amount of fluid that you drink and pay attention to how much that is so that every 2 hours you have to pee and then hit the bananas.
Okay.
And I've got another suggestion. Another suggestion. Tell your wife that you're going to change things a little bit and see what her response is. Has she been, like, talking to you about this or, you know?
Yeah. She's been razzing me for a week.
She has been. And what have her suggestions been?
We think it's dehydration, too, but also I drink a lot of water rather than sports drinks.
Now, sports drinks, on the whole, unless they're low carbohydrate, that can be some of the carbohydrate you're getting, too. You don't have to eat too much in the way of carbs, but you are potassium deficient and fluid deficient. And good luck with the missus.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. I have a banana a day, but I still have no energy. Now,
well, that's because you don't ride 6 to 8 hours a day.
Oh.
See, if you rode 6 to 8 hours a day, you would have lots of energy, and you'd be a different person.
I'm going to start doing that in my dreams. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. On to St. Louis, Missouri now. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I am 27 years old, and in high school, well, I'm of Indian ethnicity, and I used to have very, very, very thick hair. I mean, if you put it in a ponytail, probably, like, the diameter was about, you know, 1.5 to 2 inches. And I'm 27 now, and my hair has thinned out to the point, it's probably, like, 40% of what it used to be.
Ooh.
I'm a vegetarian, but I try to get as much protein as I can. I eat very healthy, I exercise, so I'm not really sure exactly why it's happening and if there's anything I could do to prevent it.
Zorba?
I've got some good suggestions. First of all, one of the things, you're a vegetarian, you want to make sure that you get enough protein in your diet. I recommend that you get Diet for a Small Planet. Fabulous book. It's now in its about fifth edition.
Well, that's
and,
an old book. That's
it's an old book, and basically it still is a good book. It's a classic book on vegetarianism because it shows how you can make complete proteins out of vegetable proteins. On the whole, vegetable proteins are often lacking an amino acid or two amino acids. You move them together, eat them at the same time, and you'll get plenty of protein. For instance, rice and beans have complementary protein. It's a good example. A lot of traditional foods really are complementary proteins because there may be a protein issue. That's one thing. And remember, if you're not a vegan, one of the good ways to get protein is through low-fat dairy sources. Now, do you
eat
any?
I do eat a lot of eggs and milk and yogurt.
Milk and yogurt are really, eggs are great because eggs, albumin is really the perfect form of animal protein that you get if you're having eggs, you know, and it's just a perfect point. It's a great form of protein to have with that. That's number one. Next thing is I recommend 1,000 units of vitamin D also, 1,000 of D. Should say vitamin D3 on the label, which has a scientific name called cholecalciferol, but that's hard to pronounce and hard to remember, so I just tell people to remember vitamin D3 because they make a difference. I'd recommend also some vitamin C, 500 milligrams, 2 to 3 times a day. And the reason is C is an excellent vitamin to help heal things. So I'd recommend some vitamin C. And then finally, the shampoo that you're using, what I would recommend is you get Selsun Blue. Selsun Blue has selenium in it, and Selsun Blue can really help the scalp. What you do is you put it on the scalp, let it sit for 5 minutes, wash it off, and do that for a few weeks. You can use another shampoo on your hair to follow up if you want to, but you want the Selsun to sit on that scalp for 5 minutes.
Okay.
Okay, that's what I would do. The other thing that happens is as we get older, our hair naturally changes and it does become thinner, but it sounds like this is excessive. And I think I would try these things.
And geez, what'd you say, 27 years old?
Yeah, I mean, it just seems a little weird to lose that much hair.
Well,
I mean,
yes.
I started out with a lot. I mean, in college, I had a really hard major, so, you know, I thought it was stress.
Well, no, but let me tell you that. Stress is an issue. But stress, 6 to 9 months after the stress, it'll stop it. Stress is an issue that will cause people to have their hair fall out. And when the stress ends, let's say it's college and you finally graduate and you get through that, often then 6 to 9 months, there'll be a regrowth. But stress can do it. A major illness can do it, such as pneumonia. A high fever can do it. There are other physiological things in the body that can do it too. But my recommendation with vitamins and things should all help you get back to that wonderful hair that you used to have.
So it is reversible, you think?
A lot of things are reversible. I think I'd try it and see what happens.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for the call. You mentioned D3 all the time.
Yes,
what does the 3 do?
Well, first of all, there are different kinds of vitamin Ds. There's not one vitamin D.
Right.
There are several different kinds. And it turns out D3 is the most absorbable vitamin. And so that's the one that happens to be studied the most. There are, I know there's a D1 and a D2 because there's a D3, but there are others there also. And the vitamin D is really a group of vitamins. The same for vitamin A. There's several different vitamins within vitamin A, but D3 is the most absorbable, and that's the one you want it to say on the label because that's where the data comes from.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a brief moment now, Zorba, to help out Ian from Madison, Wisconsin, who sent an email to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. He writes, I'm 28, and I've been avoiding doctor visits since high school because of a fairly severe needle phobia. I've decided it's time to beat the phobia, but I don't know how. I've read that my reaction against the needle is a vasovagal. Am I pronouncing that right?
Not at all.
What
but,
is it?
But go on.
Well, how does it pronounce?
You want me to correct you?
Yes.
Oh, but then you'll be
insulted. No, please.
Oh, okay. My pleasure. Vasovagal.
Vasovagal.
Very good. Excellent. Say it again. Vasovagal.
Vasovagal.
You got it, baby.
Vasovagal reflex. What is that? What is a vasovagal reflex?
Faint.
Huh?
Faint. Feels like he's going to faint.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
thank
faint.
You. That causes drops in blood pressure,
right.
Fainting,
that's
and
right.
I should have done that. Fainting and vomiting. All that fun stuff.
Vomiting.
So
yuck.
How do you beat or control an involuntary reflex of your circulatory system?
Yeah, there actually is a way.
Well,
is a way. And a lot of people have it, and guys have it more than girls. Women don't tend to have it as much as men, but men often have it. And I think that women don't have it as much. One theory is they are used to seeing blood because they menstruate, and so they see blood, and they're used to it, and it just doesn't mean as much, whereas guys, as soon as they see blood, will look at it and faint. And let me tell you, I've seen that in the office where I'll have a big guy. He'll be, you know, 6 feet tall, you know, 6'2", 220 pounds, you know, and we'll see blood, and all of a sudden I'll hear, you know, come here, you know, he'll be on the floor, you know, be out. The way you do it is when you go and you have your blood drawn is you tell them you're a fainter and you want to lay down. That's all you do. It's very simple. And then you'll get over it. And you always have your blood drawn laying down forever for the rest of your life. You never have to have it drawn sitting up.
No, but
you can't faint. No, you don't faint laying down.
No, but he's a guy. He doesn't want to have to lie down. He wants to be able to control this and have it taken just like a girl.
Be a man and control it. But in all seriousness, the vasovagal response, what happens is people stop having their blood drawn because the faint then becomes the issue that they're concerned with.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the nausea, and they get very disturbed and their hands start to sweat. And what you do is you say, I'm a fainter. You lay down. And they do this all the time. If you're sitting in a chair, you say, I want to lay down flat. And when you lay down flat and you have your blood drawn once or twice, and you have to lie there after the blood is drawn for 3 to 5 minutes because you'll faint afterwards. The response can occur 3 to 5 minutes afterwards. After that happens once or twice, you often can realize this is not going to happen, and you can try sitting up and seeing if that will work. But my recommendation is lying down a minute before and then lying down for 3 to 5 minutes after the blood is drawn. It works. It works like a charm.
Good. We want to help you cure your phobias, unless you have a phobia of emailing a public radio show. So send them or your lifestyle question in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a listener recipe coming up. This one from Mount Vernon, Illinois listener Vivian Deloso. It's a good one. Stay tuned. More of your calls too, of course, and some interesting research in our medical myth buster all here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI. Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, that number, if you have a question for Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. Before that, though, it is recipe time now. Let's welcome Vivian Deloso from Mount Vernon, Illinois. Vivian, hi.
Hello.
Thanks so much for submitting the recipe, and we're looking forward to it. The recipe, I've got to tell you, I don't quite understand. It's quinoa salad. What is quinoa?
Well, quinoa is sort of a grain. It's not actually considered a real grain because we use the seeds, but it's used as a grain substitute.
A grain substitute.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Now I know a little bit about quinoa, not a lot. It's a South American of origin. It's been around for a bunch of years. It's been used by the Incas, I think, in terms of sort of pre-Columbian Andean civilizations. There was corn and there were potatoes and there was quinoa. And tell me how you got into using quinoa. It's not really you don't go in the typical restaurant and say, I want some quinoa salad. How did you start with quinoa?
Well, we started using quinoa as a lower carbohydrate food substitute for rice. Our heritage is Filipino, so we use a lot of rice, but it's higher in carbohydrate. But whenever I cooked quinoa, it does not really have the starchy or the sticky texture of rice, but rather it's similar to couscous. So I thought of using it in a more Mediterranean dish, such as this one.
So it sort of doesn't taste like anything? Because couscous sort of doesn't taste like anything to me.
It's got a nutty taste, but the texture is sort of couscous.
Yeah. Now, couscous is sort of an instant dish. You put in hot water, and 2-3 minutes later, it's made. How do you actually cook and make quinoa? Does it come in a box or at the health food store? Where do you get yours at?
You get it as a dry seed, and there's a couple of ways to cook it. One is stovetop, which you boil 2 cups of water and add 1 cup of quinoa and let it simmer for 15 to 20 minutes. But the easier way, which is what I do, is to use the rice cooker, actually. And then it's ready to be used in whatever dish you want to use it for.
Okay, I want to just chime in for a second. And I want to chime in about the rice cooker. A rice cooker is an essential part of every good kitchen. We bought our rice cooker 30 years ago. It's been working for 30 years. It makes perfect rice. And a lot of people don't realize this is really in all, pretty much in the Pacific Rim and throughout Asia. As soon as you have any money and have electricity, you buy a rice cooker because all you do is put the stuff in there and the rice gets cooked. You don't have to watch it on the stove. I'm amazed at how many houses I go into and when people decide to make rice, they put it on the stove and I'll go, "Don't you have a rice cooker?" And they'll say, "Why do we need a rice cooker?" They don't understand. They last forever and they're an essential part of the kitchen. Tom is smiling because he doesn't have one in his house.
Well, I'm thinking of selling the stove. Let's.
Okay, well, one more question. Is quinoa part of traditional Filipino food?
No, it's not. We tried to use as a rice substitute.
I think it's a great idea. Let's go through the recipe. Start out, this is Vivian's quinoa salad.
Yeah, and Vivian, chime in here whenever you want to add something or ask something, okay, as we go along?
So we start out with 2 cups of cooked quinoa. As we said, cooking it in the rice cooker, best way to do it. You cook it, you stop, you go away. When you come back, you've got some cooked quinoa.
Yes, you actually let it cool down after you cook it before you start this recipe.
Okay, so in other words, you cook it, let it cool down to room temperature, and go from there. So 2 cups of cooked quinoa.
2 cups of cooked quinoa.
1 large tomato seeded and diced.
A large tomato seeded and diced.
1 large cucumber seeded and diced.
A large cucumber seeded and diced.
That's right.
The reason why I seed and dice both the tomatoes and the cucumber is to avoid getting the salad too moist and watery.
Oh.
Oh, excellent point. Yeah. So, and actually, you're right. If you think about a cucumber and you don't seed it, then there's lots of moisture in the middle of the cucumber, and that'll water down the salad. The same for the tomato.
Yeah.
The seeds
right.
and the tomato have basically a watery gel in both cases around them, so they're both seeded. A can of chickpeas drained. Now, do you wash the chickpeas then in the water to get out that carbohydrate on the surface of the chickpeas, or do you just drain it?
No, I just drain it, and sometimes, you know, if there's a little bit moisture left, it's okay too, but yeah, I drain it and not wash it.
Okay, so a can of chickpeas drained. A 1/4 cup of minced fresh parsley.
1/4 cup of minced fresh parsley.
3 tablespoonfuls of minced fresh mint.
3 big tea minced fresh mint.
Can't you almost smell it? As soon as I see mint, I think of that.
Yeah.
See, parsley has a smell to it.
Yeah.
Mint has a smell to it, of course. We're looking at the texture of tomato and cucumber. 1 ounce of crumbled feta.
1 ounce of crumbled feta cheese.
You see, so immediately now we can picture how this recipe is developing with that, with the goat, the fullness that you get from goat cheese. 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
Now, do you use extra virgin all the time?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so I think that's important. And, you know, when we look at feta cheese and olive oil, we look at there's thought to be a fifth taste besides salt, sugar, bitter, and sour. There's something called umami, which is Japanese, which is the fullness of the taste, and it's thought to be the fifth sense of the tongue. And the feta and the olive oil give it the umami along with the juice of 1/2 lemon.
Did you just make that up?
No. Umami is, no, I didn't just make it up. That's right. You know, you're always looking at things, asking me if I make things up. No, umami. You were shocked by that. But you notice she immediately knew umami too.
She did. The two of you are in league.
Cahoots.
Juice from 1/2 lemon.
And 1 tablespoonful of white wine vinegar.
A little tea, white wine vinegar.
Yeah, I like the concept of white wine. I think if I used balsamic, it would be overpowering. It would also make it dark. It would change the color. And salt to taste. I like using kosher salt in something like this. I think it adds a bit of texture to it.
So put it together.
Put it together. Mix all the ingredients in a large bowl. Cover and chill for 30 minutes and enjoy. I like this. I think this is dynamite.
And heart healthy.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Heart healthy. So where do you bring this? How often do you serve this?
Oh, well, at home, I usually have it 2x a week.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we have gatherings with friends and family, I make it for them. And, you know, they don't even realize they're eating something healthy.
They don't even realize they're eating something healthy. I love it. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Vivian.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
For sending us this winning recipe, listen to this. Vivian will receive a $50 gift certificate, compliments of Oscary Organics. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. You can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast, search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor on your health recipes, and look at the nutritional content of all of our recipes or today's recipe too. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
Our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. We welcome a caller now, Zorba, in Piercy, California. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I've recently been diagnosed with celiac disease, and not only had I not heard of it, but I was amazed to hear that it's become sort of an epidemic.
Wow.
And I'd like to ask Zorba one thing, and how in the world do you just get this? And evidently, it's pretty widespread. Now I'm realizing there's lots of websites and blogs, and there's even a magazine called Living Without. So I know,
living,
it's hysterical.
Living Without, you know.
Right.
You know, I must tell you something. There's something about the web that is so wonderful, because when you get something such as celiac disease, you now realize you're not alone.
Right.
And for many years, when people would have something such as celiac disease, they might, you know, see some friends or relatives, but they wouldn't realize how common some of these problems are. And celiac disease, I don't know if the incidence is any more common, but the way to diagnose it is much, much easier than it used to be. So do they diagnose it initially by a blood test or by a biopsy?
Actually a blood test, but then they went ahead and did do biopsy.
Correct, because that is the only, the thing is, we have a blood test that looks for antibodies, basically, to, there are antibodies that develop to the small intestine that are caused by gluten intolerance. In other words, you basically become allergic, if you will, to wheat. And then the only way to accurately make the diagnosis is to actually go in. Did they go in with a little, did you swallow
endoscopy.
Something?
No, it wasn't the pill thing. It was an endoscopy.
Okay, so there's one thing, you swallow a pill, and the pill sort of goes through the gut, and they take it out with a little string.
Right.
And that's one method. And the other method is endoscopy, and they look at it. It's a diagnosis made looking at a biopsy of the small intestine, and it's very specific for this, and it's common. And it is gluten intolerance, so that means bread.
Yeah.
You know, you can't commonly eat bread, and pasta, and a whole bunch of things. And then when you look at prepared foods, I bet you're shocked at how much wheat is in prepared foods.
Absolutely.
You know, basically, when you go to the store and you see anything that's in a can or a box, it almost has gluten in it. It's really a commonly used thing. Now, why did you get in middle age? We don't know. We don't know. There's no good understanding. Why do people take a pill, for instance, for 10 years and one day they get allergic to the pill? We don't really understand what brings on allergies and why they occur in some people and why in other people they can then tolerate things. Can you tolerate any amount of wheat, or is it a
– Oh, no. In fact, reading some of these blogs, they say you can't even like use the same cutting board as somebody who just cut a loaf of regular bread.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's really a function of how specific you are. You know, it's sort of like the people who say you have to sterilize the cutting board between different types of food and wipe their hands too much and wash their hands too much. There can be a relative gluten intolerance, and it can be very specific. The same, by the way, with peanut allergy. Some people literally can almost smell peanuts, and there's enough protein in the smell that they actually develop an allergic reaction, whereas most people with a gluten allergy have to have a couple of tastes in order for them to get it. We don't know what causes it, and the answer is you have to stay away from gluten. That's the answer. That is the only
cure for it. Could this ever go away for her?
Probably not. Probably not. It usually doesn't go away. But for some people, it can settle down over time so they can have a taste of something. You know, you can have a taste of a crusty bread and you may tolerate it. But for most people, they have to stay away from wheat.
Well, you know, my doctor was saying that 1 in 133 people are thought to be gluten intolerant, and only 1 in 4,000 is diagnosed.
Whoa. Oh, that's interesting. Well, some people, but for those people, for most of the people, then it may be a relative intolerance, and they learn how not to eat a lot of pasta at a restaurant, as a good example.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in your case, you're obviously one of those who's been diagnosed, and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We appreciate the call. And before we break, Zorba, we have a food edition of the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. This case comes to us from Deputy Liz and involves your attempt to speak Spanish. You were trying to say that a salsa was spicy in Spanish. You use the word caliente. Deputy Liz,
I got it right away.
Deputy Liz corrects you by writing, caliente is the word for hot, as in temperature.
Right, right, exactly.
Picante is the word for as in spicy.
That's right.
Picar is the verb to sting like a mosquito, and spicy food does that to your mouth. Caliente comes from calor, which you would know is related to calorie, a measure of heat. I love your show. I also love Spanish.
Yeah, well, considering the fact that all four of my children are completely fluent in Spanish, I'm sure they're going to tell me when I get home what happened on the radio. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
If you feel the need to cite Zorba in any language with a grammar citation, join the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. If you want to correct me, think twice about it. Send us an email anyway to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some interesting research, some more of your calls. We have our medical myth buster. Lots of great reasons to stay tuned here to Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, 800-462-7413. But before we get back to the phones, Zorba, almost a double medical myth buster here. You mentioned our medical topic has to do with diverticulosis and eating nuts, corn, popcorn, that sort of thing. Talk about it.
Well, first of all, diverticulosis are pockets in the colon. As we get older, we tend to have these little pockets in the colon. It's associated with people who eat a lot of refined carbohydrates.
And we think that maybe eating nuts and popcorn, that sort of thing,
many years,
into those pockets.
Many, many years. The theory, we know what causes diverticulosis. It's associated with a diet that happens to be low fiber. But also, the theory was that certain things, popcorn, nuts, and seeds, will get stuck in the pockets. The pockets then expand. They become inflamed. And then you have diverticulitis, which is an inflammation of the colon, and that's painful and uncomfortable.
Well, that makes some sense. You would think that would be true.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, now, the theory was that surgeons, when they took it out, if they actually had to do surgery and people had severe diverticulitis, most people respond to antibiotics and fiber change, would find these nuts in there and say, well, the nut is getting stuck there. Stop eating nuts. Stop eating nuts. Well, this was a study that finally asked the question, is this an old doctor's tale? Is this a myth? And diverticular disease is common. About a third of the population over the age of 50 has it. They looked at the health professional follow-up study. Doctors and nurses from 1986 to 2004 had a self-administered questionnaire. More than 50,000 men in this particular study, 40 to 75, who were free of diverticulosis at the beginning, they looked at their health habits. Do they eat popcorn and nuts?
Yeah.
They looked at whether or not they developed diverticulosis or diverticulitis. And lo and behold, there was absolutely zero association between popcorn consumption and nut consumption and diverticulitis. None. Nada. finished myth.
But you just said that they find little particles in there.
It turned out that when they actually looked at surgeons and queried surgeons to who actually take out these, you know, these colons, they the colons, they have to take out part of it. How many times did surgeons actually find a nut or a popcorn in the colon when they actually had surgery and did surgery in these cases? Guess how many times?
I don't know.
Zero.
Well, but you just said that they did.
No, it was passed down from surgeon to surgeon, from father to son.
Some past
George over there found a nut back there in 1890. That's what it was. It was total myth. Now, I told this. I had a patient in my office. I saw her the other day, and I said, you've got diverticulosis, but I have good news for you. You can eat nuts and seeds. And she looked at me, and she said, I can't believe it. I am so upset. I said, why are you upset? She said, well, for the last 20 years I haven't been able to eat popcorn, and I love popcorn, and now you're telling me to eat popcorn. And I said, yes, you can eat popcorn. Congratulations.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba, in St. Mary's, Georgia. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I had a question, and I haven't been able to get very much clear information on this. Our family's military, so we move around a lot, and we lived, we were stationed in California, and around the base was nothing but farms. While I was there, I've always been healthy as an ox. I developed asthma, I started having issues with conjunctivitis, so then, and it turns out, like, a lot of the people around there were having issues with allergies, asthma, and stuff like that, that were living around me, and, we were thinking it was the mildew or something in the house. I went to the doctor. I was going for a while, and finally I switched doctors, and he said, because they couldn't give me an answer, and then he said it was pesticide poisoning. So I was wanting to know, first, how does this happen living around farms, and how do you get it tested, and how do you get it treated? Do I need to be concerned for my kids now, and stuff like that?
Well, on what grounds did he say you had pesticide poisoning?
Symptoms put all together, because he had listed a couple symptoms that I didn't even tell him about, but I had. He put all the symptoms together, and then he ran a blood test, and then my thyroid was issues, but he said the pesticides can attack thyroid.
Yeah, I respectfully disagree. I don't think that there's any way you can look and say with assurity, any scientific assurity, that pesticides are the issue. There are a lot of issues that are there when you're living next to farms, but I don't buy that. There are a lot of issues. You know, when you're living in the country next to a farm, first of all, there are the dust issues, lots and lots of dust. There are the pollen issues. You know, when things are germinating, it has pollen. Lots of people are allergic to pollens, or they develop an allergy to pollen. And pollens are the most, the protein from pollens are the most common thing that people are allergic to. You certainly can develop an allergy to the chemicals that are in the air, but most of the time, the chemicals that are sprayed, they're in the air when they're sprayed, and then they stay in the ground. They're not necessarily in the air at all. I mean, they're usually in the ground sitting there. So I don't think that he can really say that with assurance. It's very clear, though, you are allergic to something. There's no doubt about that. And I think probably when he mentioned other symptoms that are there, they're really symptoms that we commonly see in an allergy. That's what it is. Now, where are you living right now?
St. Mary's, Georgia. It's right on the Florida-Georgia border. It's about as east as you could go.
Yeah, so tell me how that, what's happening there? Are you having some of the same symptoms at all?
Yeah, but they've lessened considerably.
Mm-hmm. How long did you live in California? How long was that?
That time, about a year.
About a year. Uh-huh. And you grew up where? Where did you grow up?
Mostly Louisiana.
Okay, so Louisiana. There's something else that I just want to bring on a personal basis. I've got four children, and they often have lived in other parts of the world. And when they come back to the house, my daughter just came back to our house, and the first thing she did when she walked in the door was sneeze. And she said, I hate Wisconsin because all I do is come home and I sneeze. And I said, well, you know, you're allergic. We've got a dog in the house, and then we've got pollens on certain, you know, in the house in the summertime and in the wintertime. Then we have mold and dust in the house, and the fact is you've developed allergies over the years to all the stuff that's in the house. And if you move to Georgia or California and you're an allergic person, 3 or 4 or 5 years later, you're going to develop allergies to those things also. So I think you had an allergy to something in the environment. I don't think you have to worry about your children. I don't think there's any evidence that these are poisons or toxins that you're allergic to. It's probably more the dust and the pollen. That's the most likely thing. And you're out of that environment now, so you don't have to worry. You know, you're not going to carry it with you. You don't have anything in your body that is toxic that's there, because basically these are things that you breathe in, breathe out. When you're done, it's gone.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, that makes more sense. I was just like, oh, because I was reading up on the pesticides, and I was like, that's scary, but how do you get it?
Yeah, pesticides are scary. So, well, good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you. God bless.
Thanks a lot for the call. There is a bottom line here, Zorba.
Yes.
If you're in California,
yes,
get the heck out of there.
Yes, get out of California. We'll get those 22 million people to move to the Midwest. I can just imagine.
Georgia.
Then we have
Georgia.
Winter. Georgia. That's
nice,
right. Georgia.
Nice spot.
Georgia.
800-462-7413. Zorba, let's get to our medical myth buster now. As if you needed another reason to quit smoking, here comes a myth now that smoking can lead to hair loss.
It's true.
No.
It's true.
Go
it's true.
Away.
It's true, at least according to a recent article in the British Medical Journal. 600 men, half of them men, half of them women, looked at whether or not hair loss was an issue. These are men from Taiwan, men of Asian descent, usually do not have male pattern baldness that Caucasian men commonly see. And they looked at men 40 to 91, did some surveys, and found, lo and behold, if you smoke cigarettes, chances are you were much more likely to develop balding than if you did not smoke cigarettes. Didn't hold for women, held for men. So I think we can say, and, you know, I am always anti-tobacco. I think that we can say that if you smoke, you're much more likely to lose your hair, and it's part of the aging process. Absolutely not a myth. Solid evidence proving it. That's what I say.
I have three cousins.
Yes.
John, Bob, and Tom.
Okay, John, Bob, and Tom. Okay.
John is a habitual cigarette smoker,
yes,
has
okay.
been all his life,
okay.
and he's bald, so
okay.
this kind of proves
it. Yeah, proves it.
But his
it
two
right
brothers.
Yeah.
Not
mm-hmm.
cigarette smokers.
Yeah.
They're bald also.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So it's 2-1 against, according to you. And for me, it's 1-4.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust? Then send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Let's see, Zorba, if we can help a listener now in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi there.
What's up?
Okay, I have toe problems.
Toe?
My, basically my three end toes, the top of them, I hurt. There's pain there. And I'd like to know what you call that, or if you can, you know, make it your toes tougher, or, you know, what the solution is here.
You've tried a bunch of different kind of shoes, I assume.
Oh, many. And I've also, you know, you can get those little cushion things, but they're really awkward and they come off and that
yeah,
kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, so, they're okay on a temporary basis. Which toes?
The three end ones, like the baby toe mm-hmm. and the next two next to it.
Okay, now between the middle of the fourth and the fifth toe, is the pain in between the toes and that soft flesh
no.
between the toes or on the toes
no.
themselves?
Just on the top.
Mm-hmm. Just on the top of the toe. Is your toe, do you have a hammer toe? Is your toe, you know, pulled up so it looks like a little hammer?
They're a little curled, but I don't think you could actually call them.
Uh-huh. Well, but a little curled is the beginning of a hammer toe. No, toes are normally flat
okay.
as we get older.
Okay.
Some of
well,
us,
they are, then.
You know, hammer toes are when they're not flat. Basically, if they're not flat, they are a type of hammer toe.
Yes.
Now, you don't wear 3-inch high heels, right?
No.
Right. One of the things this can be, it can be from the hammer toes. They themselves can be painful, and there are surgical procedures if they bother you. Hammer toes. The other is something called a Morton's neuroma. Now, Morton's neuroma is a swelling of the nerve. Basically, there are pain fibers that go to the toes. They feed the toes. They feed the space in between the toes more than the toes themselves. And often, they can become swollen with a neuroma. It means a swollen nerve. And that itself can produce the pain. Sometimes, if you put an injection right into the nerve with a little xylocaine and a little steroid, they can get the nerve to settle down and sometimes that's enough to do it. Other times you actually have to have surgery to remove the nerve. The toe becomes a little numb, but it doesn't bother you. And for people with chronic pain, that can be very, very useful. And the third thing is, if it's from the hammer toe, the answer may be either to wear a broader shoe. And if no shoe works, then I would consider surgery. if it's hammer toe. So it's either Morton's neuroma or a hammer toe. Those would be the most likely diagnoses for this. You do not have diabetes, is that correct?
No.
Because that's another common cause of pain. And sometimes that's the way diabetes actually presents. People will say, I've got numbness in my foot. I've got pain in my foot. What's going on? They go to the doctor and indeed, a test is done and they're found to have a painful foot. And that's often the diagnosis. They do a blood test, see the blood sugars up, and that can be the first time we see diabetes. But I think I would go look at your family doctor, internist, or a podiatrist, look at your feet, see what's going on, and get some help.
Okay. Good options.
Thank you for your call.
Good luck.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Before we get out of here, Zorba, let's help out a loyal listener who sent an anonymous email to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. She writes, I am a 35-year-old female. I was wondering if it is okay to use antiperspirant along the bikini line. I run a line along where my legs meet my body because over the last year, I've noticed that I am sweating more in that area than I used to. I have found this to be a way of controlling the sweating and have not had any concerns since trying this, except that the bottle says for underarm use only.
Yeah, I have no idea why they say that on the bottle. You can use it anywhere on your body, anywhere at all. So the answer is yes. You can certainly use it on your skin. And it's an aluminum product, and the aluminum products, the aluminum that's within there is actually the antiperspirant. It stops the pores from working, and the answer is yes. You can use it without any problem at all.
I'll bet you that they're worried about people. Don't ask me what dummies would do. Putting it on their
I'm
eyes.
Sure.
Or
in I am the, sure. Yeah, yeah. In fact, you think about it, and you think, it's people will put it anywhere. So we only tested it under the arms, so that's the only place you can use it. But the answer is yes, you can pretty much use it anywhere on the body. Obviously not in places such as your mouth and your eyes, but yes, you can use it at the bikini line and do it.
If you have a tip to share, we want to hear from you. Just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
It'll be my pleasure, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg, also known as Stadler and Waldorf, are the guys on the other side of the glass. Charles Monroe Kane is the executive producer, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0927Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.